Okay, let's call our meeting to order and look at the minutes for June 14th, the minutes of June 14th.
I thought there was another set of minutes too that you sent out.
Because we did a whole bunch of minutes.
We did three last time.
Yeah, we did.
Three in a row.
We cleared all those up. Everybody has had a chance to look at it? I have one thing on page four.
Four, okay.
After all of our discussion and staff's presentation, everything, we got down to the point at the bottom, just above number six. At the conclusion of discussion, a motion was not made by the members to either support or oppose. That's correct. Mr. Newton stated that if there is any recommendation, staff, I think that should be if there is no recommendation, which there wasn't, then staff should just continue doing what they're doing and take it to the board.
Okay. Yep. Change that.
Just change that.
Thank you.
You need to know.
That or say no action taken.
It was no action, yeah. It does say that about it. So we're good. All right. We have a motion for approval of the minutes?
As corrected.
We're not taking any action.
That was the last time. This is just the minutes.
I'll move to approve the minutes.
I'm really bored.
Minutes as corrected.
As amended. All right.
As amended.
We have a second. Okay. Your second, Mr. Waters. Wow. Guys got uptight after that. All those in favor? Aye. All right. Minutes are approved as they've been adjusted and submitted.
Okay.
Item number three, public comments. Gentlemen? No. Okay. District staff report, you're on, Michaela.
All right. I don't really have an update on the capital projects. We've got a lot of projects in design phase, and we're really shorthanded, although we've hired a new engineer we've hired a new engineer manager. The engineer four reported on board beginning of this week. The engineer manager is due the end of the month, and we have a new inspector starting shortly thereafter. So we'll have Susan's group finally almost fully staffed because we have an engineering tech to quit. So we take three steps forward.
So these are under Susan?
These are under Susan. Right. So we spent a lot of time just interviewing and getting those actions through. So that's really my update there. Water quality report. We have only two complaints. Both were for pressure, and both were on the customer side. So nothing for us.
Now, do you have those, like when she called up the capital project thing, are you able to put that up?
I have it, if you want to
go.
Yeah. Okay, good, because we don't have the hard copies.
Right.
Okay, so we've done that one, right?
So the next meeting will be all on iPads.
Okay, this is the latest coming.
I wasn't necessarily going to go through this because there really wasn't anything significant.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay. So let's go ahead on water supply conditions. And as promised, we're going to go into the 21st century. And here we go. Kind of reservoir conditions. And what we're going to do in the minutes is just put in the link.
Like that blue up there.
Mm-hmm. Put the link in.
That's okay.
Right. Because this comes off of an online site.
Mm-hmm.
We downloaded, so I don't think there's a need to
provide
all that paper to you guys. So far, so good.
But if you're going to go paperless, you're going to send this out in the board package? When you send out the
link?
Well, the whole agenda. So the agenda with the water quality issues and the capital improvements and whatever other documentations we're discussing.
We normally don't get them until the day of.
Really? Yes.
So then
the capital project Susan did today.
Right, but that normally goes into the minutes?
Yes, it goes into the minutes.
Right, but this, in the minutes, we're just going to put the link in?
We'll put the link in the minutes.
Unless you...
We're going to discuss it at the meeting, or just, like, you sent it with the minutes prior on this meeting, right?
Right.
So that's what you're going to continue to do?
But that's the last
report.
Right,
it's the draft minutes. I send out the draft minutes,
right.
And I put the attachments separately, which is
which
what
is the
we
last
press
report.
It. Right, which was the last one.
This is
but the current one
is
what's done today, up what we have up here. Or yesterday. I'm sorry,
so,
July 11th.
So I guess my question is, do you want this... Do you still want it as a separate attachment, or my plan for these type of documents that are basically downloaded from the internet, that I will just provide a link in the minutes.
Do you want them earlier?
Just whatever we were discussing, if we're going to go paperless, everything that we were getting prior to the meeting, we should still be getting, just so we can have it on our iPads or computer or whatever.
I can do that, yeah.
Yeah.
So the attachments for like the last
like the
meeting's
capital improvements,
minutes?
That's to look at it up on the screen for 2 seconds and then move on.
Right.
That's not enough time to digest that information.
No,
so if you had it when we got the draft minutes or the board agenda or...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right.
In other words,
because usually we have it
updated just before the meeting.
So we'd have to update that the week before, or we'd be a week behind when we're at the point, but whatever.
Okay. Yeah, I think he's right. I think it'd give us a chance to go over this the stuff that's going to be here, the current.
I mean, that we can just
so we can
see here, that's no big deal. But
my concern before was I didn't want to print all that stuff because it was always here in hard copy. So, but if
there isn't a big stack.
Not a big stack.
If it's sent to us, if the current report comes out with, I guess, the minutes. The minutes has the past stuff, but
they
also need the current agenda material that comes with the agenda. And then it's up to whoever, if they want to print it or just read it.
And links are great.
You have a link to Dropbox or something on all of it, we just can hit it and pull it up.
Right. Okay. Sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah. Because then it'd be kind of like for the Board of Supervisors before the meeting, you can go in there and look at all the
stuff. And look at them. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that might be the next step we take.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right.
Okay.
Fox Canyon?
The only thing, it's kind of comes up later on item K, but I think it's really a Fox Canyon GMA issue.
Mm-hmm.
Right now is that you guys had asked for a copy of the commencement of the groundwater basin adjudication.
Do you want to
read that now? I don't really have any comments on it per se, except to say that when I met with county council, at this point, we want to kind of see how far this ends up going before we're really concerned. We don't really think that either District 1 or 19, we will end up, because we've been pumping that water for so long, that we don't really think our rights to that water and to that allocation are in jeopardy at this moment in time. So
what are we doing? Is this a complaint that we have to answer?
No. It's not a lawsuit against the district. It is commencement of a groundwater basin adjudication. And there is now a process to do that. And so we've been served, GMA has been served, and we could engage council and try to reclaim it on this at this moment in time, but my advice from county council right now is that that's not necessary. There isn't a need right now to protect our rights, so to speak.
I thought you still had to answer, though.
I'm being told I don't.
So it's at some point, does our council have to get in and defend us in terms of our rights as we see it?
Part of it is to see how far this even goes once the adjudication process starts.
So the adjudication process will start. There isn't a chance to avoid that.
The judge ruled last week that it's legit, and they're going to move it out of the county. They're going to assign it to a judge up in Stanislaus or something.
No kidding. That's what I was looking for, a status. Where the heck are we? All right. So we're going to do it now. Adjudication. I saw one up in Tulare County. It's bloody.
All
right.
Anyway, so this is for you guys. I think a lot of this we've heard at LPUG meetings and what their biggest issues are. But okay, so we're there. Don't have anything new on Cayugas. Moore Park Desalter. I did an updated presentation with the LPUG, and maybe for one of the next meetings, I can do a presentation on what I showed them. The biggest change is kind of adding that the stormwater capture project as part of mitigation, and the change in probably needing to do a smaller project given on the reduction in water coming down from sea.
Okay, where is the information coming that there's a reduction in the water coming down from sea? The project that was proposed has gone away.
Well, the avocados, but we still, when we with Ready, we were talking about Simi Valley building out to their full capacity always. It was always they were going to use 100% of their recycled water, and we were only counting on what was left for fish and game, and so I don't understand.
Yeah, that's a good point. However, I can tell you they do not have the capability of moving forward without some big private capital investment, and they don't have it. So they're not planning on anytime soon. They'd like to get their recycled water going, but they don't have the money. So it's going to be a long time. So, you know, that's, you know, the safe thing, obviously, is to design it as though they do, and we only have the residual that's required to be discharged. That's probably correct.
Well, my understanding was the project as originally sized was always to be done in two phases, and the full-size project was assuming there was, that CME wasn't utilizing all of their water. But when we got notification of that they were planning and had projects developed, Susan went back to Steve Bachman to rerun the models, and it didn't seem like the hydrology was going to support the full-size project just doing the phase one portion. So
our desalter would have to drop to 2,500? Is it cost effective to do it for that lesser amount?
It appears to still be that. We still have to analyze the cost of adding the stormwater capture program. And at this point, we've got to reanalyze the financials on it.
Because it probably is still going to cost as much
Same
as
amount,
a,
yeah.
to build a doggone thing, but have less of volume. I suppose we could build in the ability to
size it up. And I think it was always kind of thought out that way, to do a phase one and a phase two, where the phase two would just be adding. And plus, you know, we've been evaluating some of the newer technology that is more modular set up, where it might be easier to add capacity in the future. Hmm. Should that opportunity present itself. But part of the challenge I'm having is making sure that I can sell the project, get LPUG support, so that when we go forward to request the allocation with the GMA, we've got something that is sustainable.
One of my questions earlier, and part of the reason I wanted to get the status on this adjudication on this lawsuit is that process going to delay or slow down our desalter process?
I don't think that is. The groundwater sustainability plan is probably going to be the biggest piece that's...
That's Fox Canyon. Where are they, GMA?
They've done the preliminary draft, and I think they're in the
final. A couple years away.
Still. Okay. Yeah, and you know, I guess the frustration for me is there's a lot of good grant money out there for recycle projects and stuff, and we can't get in line. We don't have a project ready to go.
We have been. I mean, we're still going after that. And we didn't get the grant we applied for last fall, but we still have the capability to go after that. We're not sitting here and going, oh, there's a grant application, but we don't know if the project's going to happen in 2 years or 3 years, so we're not going to go after that.
Okay.
Continue to apply for that. And actually, that was, to me, a big selling point to the LPUT was, you know, try to explain that, you know, we have access to capital, ability to apply for grants, and ability to construct it. And not every, you know, if you've got to put a consortium together of a bunch of small mutuals, they're still going to be challenged to put together a $20 million project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's important too, though, that I had to leave early, but to drive home, that salt plume is still moving.
Right.
And it's going to ruin their wells, it's going to ruin Moore Park's well, it's going to ruin, if we don't.
Eventually
it's going to get.
Right. And the biggest pushback I got was from Esper Peterson, who his wells are near the oil well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then Carol, but it was her remarks, I think, are a little bit more collaborative. I think Peterson was definitely looking.
Carol Zone?
Show.
What do they say about the salt plume? I understood that some of them were saying they don't care.
Zone doesn't really care because they're blending that water. They would like to have, they've studied their own desalination project and want to use that water, even if it's salty, they want to do their own project. Huh. It'd be more cost effective if we partnered up with them, if Burwood and Zone and District somehow would probably get the heat off us. Peterson's downstream, and he thinks we're going to take the head off of his deeper aquifers, which would lower his pumping
levels.
And then I don't know, Brian Bondi, he's still of the opinion that if we take out that salt water and we treat it, that we're going to relieve the pressure on the deeper aquifer, and the pumping levels and the ASR and our wells will be deeper. Which, when it was sold to me years and years ago, was we're taking that salt, but we're replacing it with stormwater.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that pressure gradient shouldn't change. Our water that we're treating in that plant should get better and become, we should have to blend more or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know what somehow it's getting lost in translation that we need to get that salt plume, what was it, moving, somebody said at the meeting, a foot a year, mm-hmm. 8 feet a year, whatever.
Right, and we need to do a better job of kind of being able to describe exactly, and that's what I told Susan. I said my takeaway was that there were questions that were related. Okay, so we're taking the salty water out, but then we're buying less state water, and so what's going back in the aquifer to replace it, and is it really that much of an improvement? And I've got to kind of dig down a little bit more mm-hmm. into, you know, what is the rate of improvement? Do we have that kind of data? One of the things, I got a separate email from Brian Bondi, you know, digging a little bit more into the technical stuff, and he had some good suggestions. And one of the things I offered up both at the meeting and when I responded was, we probably need to get, I don't want to get at the LPUG meeting in a big finger-pointing session related to the technology and the hydrology. Mm-hmm. But can we get, you know, Brian, our consultant, maybe somebody off the tag, together and have them duke it out, you know, and basically poke holes into, you know, what are the issues, what are your concerns, and to make sure we're describing it accurately from a technical side.
And I think District 19 is well number 4, and Tom Stavens' well across the street were the last two wells affected by the salt plume as it's moving to the north, mm-hmm. Balcom Canyon. Mm-hmm. And the next wells, there's two Burwood wells that are in line to be affected next, so that's the, you know, that's the mm-hmm. my concern.
Yeah.
Plugging away. Avenues of public outreach. The next bill mail out will include an insert related to some of the rebates that are being offered again through the Metropolitan Cayugas pipeline related to turf removal and sprinklers and irrigation systems and things
so
of that nature.
So turf removal is coming back. I thought they didn't want to do it anymore.
They did, but let's just say there's going to be better oversight, because that's the biggest thing they got dinged on was who's managing, how are you determining, and I know one big takeaway from one of the purveyor meetings was that turf removal means exactly that. It doesn't mean replacing it with artificial turf that then creates a heat load problem. Which doesn't necessarily help. Uh-huh. So I'm wondering if I can remove my artificial turf and board letter tracker. The only thing really on the board letters is the next one of anything. I'm not even going to put it up there because it's really just the rates that are going to the next major thing in front of the Board of Supervisors is going to be the rates. And first week in December is what I'm shooting for right now.
First week in December. So when will we start working on it?
The next meeting, I want to have what I call my brief on what are the inputs and the methodology, the inputs into the rate development and the methodology.
Okay.
So starting kind of a little bit at the beginning, and then one or two meetings after that based on any conversation, any opportunities for public input, then have some rate development and get a vote and some comments on that. Prop 218 notices need to go out by mid-October.
I was going to say we'd have to be finished in September. July, August, September. All right. August, September. This is July.
Mm-hmm.
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 Okay.
Right. And at the same time, I've got to do a parallel discussion and meetings with the city of Moore Park. Hi, Sean. All right. Consumer confidence reports. This is an annual requirement covering the testing between January and December of last calendar year. The only thing that's required to send out to customers is we have to post them electronically. If they want to have hard copies, of course, we can make them available. All they have to do is either call us or stop by the office. This is pretty much what they're going to look like. And we're doing a file and receipt notification of the Board of Supervisors.
Mm-hmm. On the 7th.
Of August.
Mm-hmm.
So we're good?
We're good there.
We're not out of sync anywhere?
Not in District 1.
Beautiful. Sounds like you have other problems.
Well, just three other
we
water
districts. We have to qualify this.
Yeah. They all are, you know, unique and special.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was just looking on here. It says our one violation was odor.
What?
Natural occurring organic material. So that's going to be well 20 up there, right? Mm-hmm. You can tell when it runs. You can. Andy's dad, Jim, swore that they drilled that well into ancient landfills or something. Dinosaurs.
Yeah.
Sell off the methane.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Any questions there?
It's just an interesting comment, lead in household plumbing, the comments on there.
Yes.
And I don't know how you determine whether somebody should be concerned whether there's lead there or not, but their recommendation is flush your tap for 30 seconds to 2 minutes. And we're in conservation.
Yeah, saving water.
Come on.
This is, do you have young children in the house? This might be not a bad precaution. If you've got an older home that's got the old lead base, because you know where it comes from is the solder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it just, what happens is it'll sit there in the little U pieces of your plumbing, and so that first bout coming through is going to happen.
The lead pipes themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I used to live in D.C., and you had some distribution pipes that had quite a high lead content there,
yeah.
And I know... Yeah, at that time I was pregnant, I had a baby, and I did not drink the tap water.
Yeah, trying to make
I borderline didn't cook the tap water.
Yeah.
But the city knew it had a problem. And it was, unlike Flint, actually let people know. And there was a very active lead test. I mean, your school age kids all, in fact, even as babies, pediatrician did lead testing.
As in D.C., and they're all in office now.
But, and I know for schools, we are required, it used to be if the schools asked us, now we have to test the schools. So.
Okay, and we've done item K, ag focus group.
Okay, so on the Wednesday, the 25th of July, we're going to have our first ag focus meeting, combined District 19 and 1. We'll be sending it out. We have email addresses for all of our ag customers. And part of that is we're trying to take our ag certification process and do that more online. So a combination of time and money of printing out flyers and mailing them to everybody, we're going to do it via email.
Okay, what's that? 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock?
6 to 7 at night. Yes,
here.
We're going to do it here.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to do it late enough that people can make it, but early enough that I don't have staff working too late. The initial agenda is going to be discussing the ag certification process. There was an emergency outage that we had to go and shut off ag customers last Friday because we were in District 19 because we were running low on some of the reservoirs and we had to maintain fire pressure. But as Dave Hazen was running around doing that, we realized that this used to happen a lot more frequently, so customers were aware. We have a lot of new customers. It hasn't happened in a long time. And so we really need to develop kind of a policy and a framework under which we do that, and how do we notify and how long. I kind of likened it to, Southern California Edison, when it's super, super hot and everybody's running the air conditioner. You know, they've got some voluntary programs where they can kind of shut off your air conditioner, or they risk having rolling brownouts. So. Mm-hmm. And we were at that point. Did get one angry email that, you know, was upset about our communication strategy. So I'll discuss that. Again, ag is an interruptible service, and we did notify everybody via hang tags. But we're even investigating whether we should do like a, you know, VC alert type thing. Because, of course, we're shutting people off when it was probably pretty critical.
Running
to be
irrigation
watered.
Water.
But, yeah, they got down in one reservoir down to a foot, and they were really concerned. Yeah, there was a little scrambling with my folks on Friday and Saturday. So. Anyways, okay, so we'll discuss that. I want to have an opportunity for folks to give me ideas for future topics, because these are meetings we want to run every 2 months. And then we'll wrap up. One of the things that Sandy's doing when she's sending out this email is also linking to a survey related to the ag certification process, so she can start gathering some data ahead of time. So, finally, it's taken a while, but once we get it on the calendar, then I think it'll just kind of keep going. All right, so.
Michaela, did you want to use the TV for this?
Yeah.
This takes a long time to load.
Okay, so since I've been here, we have kind of an informal leak adjustment program, and it was a concern to us because of how it was run in the past. It was based on those really high penalty rates that were added to the tier two and tier three, and we actually called them penalty rates, and so that's what was where the relief came from. But Gene noted that when we did that under the current system, there's just not that much difference between the tiers because it's not based on a penalty, and as a result, any kind of relief was pretty minimal. So I had her do a little bit of research to come up with an alternative. So right now, basically, they have to have something pretty significant. They call our office. I think we do one a year currently. Mm-hmm. And they have to come back and show us that they fixed it. So they have to show us receipts, and then we'll do the leak adjustment afterwards. We don't do them if you have a leak in your pool. We do them for irrigation or something in the house or something of that nature. There is nothing currently in the rules and regs for that. It's just something that we have done as a matter of internal policy. Kind of asked around some of the other water purveyors. CME doesn't currently have a program. I can tell you, and from personal experience, Crestview Mutual is like too bad, so sad. And I had a $1,000 water bill 1 month. So, Thousand Oaks, again, has to show proof of a fixed leak, one-time adjustment at the wholesaler water rate. Camarillo they look at a 12-month rolling average before the leak. And then that amount is billed at the lowest residential, so basically a tier one, and they get an adjustment every 12 months. City of Ventura, they have to, first of all, be a customer for at least 2 years and show some kind of 2-year average. and they can't get more than one adjustment every 5 years. So, again, what led us to look at this is the small differential in the tier pricing just didn't make it, it wasn't even worth processing if they were only going to get like $3 or $4 back. So what we propose is a one-time adjustment per customer. And part of this is we have two districts that are rolling to AMI where we should be able to do leak detection much earlier. As we get the districts, the District 1 and 19 on some kind of AMI system, then hopefully we'll do that there too. Residential tiered rate only, and only if it exceeds tier 2 and tier 3, which... So, same thing, they need to show receipts that the leak has been fixed. We want to have somebody that's, it's a little hard to determine, even from just 1 year, what is an unusually high amount if we don't have a couple of years of data to go with. So anything less than that really didn't make that much sense to us. And we liked what Thousand Oaks was doing with billing that to the essentially our water supply cost. And the reason for that is that if somebody all of a sudden has a leak and is using way more water, if they didn't have that leak, we wouldn't have had that water sale. And so it's the extra cost associated with the billing and the peaking charge that kind of doesn't really apply to that scenario. So as long as we're recouping our basic costs, we feel that that's fair, and then it's not something that has to be paid for by the other ratepayers. But it, anyway, so.
How do you handle if it's tiered ag well, or tiered ag rate?
There is no tiered ag rate.
There's none, I mean, I'm sorry, domestic ag rate. I like, for example, me, I've got a domestic usage on my ag meter.
Yes, and we have a very small group, either grandfathered in or through a contract, most customers who have residential are in a regular tier rate.
Basically.
Fix the pipe bill.
You're the guest.
You know, and again, this I'm trying to find the right balance of having something in writing that is a policy. I don't necessarily want to tie the district's hands so much that I can't. There's always going to be case-by-case situations. But I think if it were to apply to any other category, if we utilize this methodology, that would pretty much apply to any other category. But generally where it's going to be very painful is a residential customer that has a leak. You know, yes, I was able to write a check for $1,000 for the month.
So,
but the average person can't. And you know, we've got, depending which district you're in, we've got customers that even if it's up, you know, 100 or 200, that's a lot.
So why not have a payment program for that problem? But why does the district have to eat that if they didn't maintain their system?
My point is, if we apply this methodology, I don't think we're eating it.
Because
it's an unusual, it would be like somebody has a product that they're buying from a store and they're all of a sudden buy a whole bunch more that wasn't profit we were necessarily expecting. And as long as our costs are being met and just paying the water, that's why I like the methodology of the basic water supply cost.
So there'd still be a charge for the water used in the leakage situation. It just would be prorated so that you don't have the peaking charge or the capacity charge.
Correct.
Or the...
Right. Because to a certain degree, that's encompassed based on an average use for that class of customers, not these unexpected peaks that are not due to a normal high usage, such as watering on a hot day.
So if you came in with your $1,000 bill, you would be like, okay, well, your bill is usually $75, so we're going to call it $200. Whatever.
Yeah, you know, assuming that, using that methodology, my bill would have probably been like $700.
This is all targeted residential, and they're sensitive rate-wise and sensitive bills-wise. How does this function? Somebody has a leak, they get the $1,000 bill. I presume they're going to have to pay it. And then how long does it take for this process to engage and
well,
conclude?
Well, It goes pretty fast once they've shown they fixed the leak. They had to provide us with the receipt. And obviously, so what'll happen, if they're that bad, when we do the billing, we sometimes notice ahead of time, hey, this is really high, and we'll call them, and sometimes that's the first time they're aware they have a leak. Mm-hmm. So.
With AMI, you can tell if they have a reverse osmosis system under their sink. Because they constantly run.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah. Yep.
So, but basically they pay it, and it takes some time to get this all resolved, and they get a refund or a credit? Or
a credit. If it's so high they need a payment plan, then they might get some relief on that payment plan.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, I mean, I think the situation with, like, the $1,000 bill, and actually Robert did offer a payment plan. I said, no, I think I'll dip in the savings. But no, something that high, we would offer up a payment plan where they could pay that. And then by the time they got it fixed, they would give us the receipts. You know, it's really up to them how quickly they can get that done. We can move pretty fast once we have all the information we need.
Sounds a lot better.
Right. So basically, go back up. So it's managed by the accounting assistants. So we have up to a certain amount in power, and we'll adjust the program based on our water supply cost as we recalculate it from year to year with the rates. We have a staff services supervisor. It was Derek and whoever comes in behind him. And it's an overall gene. When they're... You know, if it ends up being a sizable amount, I've issued letters to each of both the accounting assistants and the supervisor and the manager that said, you know, you are authorized to resolve things up to a certain dollar amount. Yeah. So if the leak adjustment ends up being like $300, then Gene will usually come to me.
Okay.
But the smaller ones, it might result in 20 or 30. Yeah, I usually have $50, you know, they can handle right there. Supervisor can go up, I think, to 100, and then Gene handles those, and then we have those discussions.
Sounds good.
So to be honest with you, we've been doing this already. Just because we didn't really have any policy prior to that, it was just this is how we've done it. So it seemed like a fair way to make these adjustments. I just wanted to come to all of the district CACs to say, hey, are you guys okay with us doing this, continuing this? Do you have some other ideas? Is there something we're missing? And then we're going to actually put this as a policy and post it on the website.
Well, I'm just curious, how often does this happen? How often does a decision have to be made? And how often in all of those decisions would it have to bump up to Gene or bump up to you or, you know?
Great question.
I might see one every couple of months.
Okay. So I mean, it does happen. It's
it
not
does
like
happen.
One in a year's time.
No,
it's one.
It does happen. They're not that frequent.
Yeah. Don't you suppose it happens quite often, but people don't bother reporting it?
Yeah,
I think that'd be the case. We went away for a weekend a few months ago, and I did call in, not for a rebate, but to tell them what happened, because my water heater, bought a brand new one,
mm-hmm.
and we left for the weekend.
Yeah.
When I came home, there was a trench down the canyon, no hot water, and a trench down the canyon. It had been running for 3 days. I called and talked to somebody else. I just don't want to be penalized. I don't mind paying for it, but I didn't want to be in a penalty situation.
Yep.
If there was one, you know.
Yep.
But I did, other than that, why wouldn't bother calling?
So this policy would take care of that?
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to do it if people don't call to ask.
I know, but if he did, but
maybe
if he called
and
hey,
right.
we have a policy in place that says you're going to pay for the water. Like Bill said, I pay for the water. I just don't want to be put in penalty because I had a leak.
Right.
Yeah.
The you've been doing this in practice, you said, up to now.
Well, because the old methodology didn't make any sense. So we were, you know, somebody would call in with, you know, a couple $100 of, you know, unusually high bill, and we could rebate them like $10 because it was the difference between tier two and tier three.
My question is, were you using the 24-month average before, or
no.
Is that going to be new? That's something
that's different. The 24 months is new. How often and what we haven't you know, Jane proposes that we do it kind of as a one-time. I think in the past, as long as they kind of get one a year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do we want to do one a year, one every 24 months, one every 5 years? I mean, I don't know if you guys have thoughts one way or another. I think this is...
I mean, a leak's a leak, and if it happens, it happens. I mean, to have somebody have one in a lifetime doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
But one every August doesn't make sense.
No. That's true. That's also true.
One every August. Yes.
The August that it happened to be 115 degrees or yes. Whatever.
But that would show up in their average, you know. You'd see
right,
that.
And that's why I do like doing the 24-month average. And if you don't have 24 months of data, well... And what it does help is the, you know, one of the things I've tried to make our staff more aware of is, you know, every customer is important. But if a customer's been buying water from us for, you know, a long time, then, and something happens, they've been paying your salary for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think that's a different scenario than somebody that, you know, just moved into the area and we don't really know what their long-term, you know, are they going to be a good customer for a long period of time?
So what do you do? Is there still a judge? Does this have to all be codified hard and tight, or somebody that is new and it was a construction problem, you know, and a pipe breaks or something, and they don't have 24 months, are you still going to work with them?
They would have to bring that to me. So I would have to look at it in the case-by-case basis.
You can place all
the rules and regs are loose enough. There's always this caveat of, you know, at the discretion.
First of the director.
Of the director.
I don't ever lose
so
that.
And I don't either because, yeah. You know, I've had the, where I was home, this was when my family was still in Maryland, and I'm home over Christmas, and I get the call from somebody who had just called Jeff Pratt's office. They're getting their water shut off, like, the day after Christmas. I said, I think we can wait a week.
Yeah.
Until we figure this out, right? Let's, you know, there was a call down to Dave Hazen going, do not shut this person off Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we can always shut them off afterwards if we think the situation
is
legitimate.
That
I'm not clear on... If someone like Bill, he has a hot water heater that goes down, and he doesn't want to get penalized... he's only allowed to do that once every 5 years, or does it just they don't penalize him for excessive water use?
Well, right now there isn't a penalty for excessive water use. It's just that you'll pop into you're not on a tiered rate, so I'm not even sure it would apply. But if you are a normal residential tiered rate, a water leak will almost automatically bump you into tier 3 scenario.
Yes.
And
so if I called and said, you know, I had a hot water blowout and I used an excessive amount of water, and I want to buy the water at wholesale, but I don't want to be charged, you know, tier 3 rate for it. Am I automatically okay to do that? Or do I only get to do that once every 5 years?
Well, I think currently we do it once a year.
Okay.
I think Gene wants to ratchet that down somewhat. I think maybe for District 1 until we get AMI in place, possibly still consider that for... you know, once a year on a case-by-case basis, for a couple of reasons. One, there's still, even though we're recouping our water costs, there's still administrative time in managing this, and really it isn't something we have to do. It's just something we do as a courtesy, recognizing that...
So it's purely on a case-by-case of how you present and show that you fixed the problem, the hot water heater has been fixed, and it's not going to...
Right. And generally, for certain, we have in the past not allowed leak adjustments for leaks associated with things like pools.
Mm-hmm.
What we consider kind of non.
I'm trying to think of the word, but
I'm trying to think of the politically correct word, but.
Frivolous.
Coolest.
Human consumption.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, related to
health and safety.
Kind of health and
health
safety.
Health and safety, there you go.
Got it. Okay, do you need something from us?
Vote?
It's
yeah.
Not an action item.
Yeah.
I put it down as an action item so I could kind of, you know, if questions come up to me, it's like, you know, I brought this to the advisory committees, we've created this policy. I think the next step is do we want to put it in the rules and regs or leave it just as a, you know, director's policy based on input from customer representatives such as yourselves.
Okay, sounded to me like you're, if you roll it back down, you're not settled yet on whether it's once a year, once every 5 years, or whatever. So what are we recommending?
Or do you want to bring it back in a month after you've had time to think on it?
No, I know my staff had said, let's see, adjustment two-tier, I think just wanting to do it one time,
one adjustment
per customer.
Yeah.
But I think that might be a little tight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're currently doing it once a year. I'm comfortable with continuing once a year until we get AMI.
Yeah.
And then I can see that, because then it would be one time, because then we can say, hey, you know, we sent out this. Have you signed up? Here's how, you know, we can walk somebody through the alert process so that way it wouldn't happen again.
Okay.
It would get one alibi.
Okay. So we adjust this to once per year.
Once
per year.
Until
24-month average and all the other.
You want a motion?
Yeah.
So moved.
Got a second? Second from Jeff. All right. The motion and a second to adopt this leak adjustment program to be established as policy or
as policy.
The regs, you don't know yet. Policy. With a change of item number one to once per year.
Mm-hmm. Until AMI is.
Until AMI. Okay. Or you'll bring it back. You'll
bring
it back.
Bring it back then.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No opposed. Okay, great. You got it.
Thank you. All right, the next.
Committee member comments or informational items or anything you want on the agenda next time? We're going to start rates next time, I understand.
I'm going.
Would you keep item K on the agenda, please, and give us status reports on what's going on with this adjudication, so we're not surprised, because we will get questions in the street once this starts going. Let's keep us informed, please.
Okay.
All right.
That's it.
We're adjourned.
Thank you.
Nice. Good. Short.
How nice.
I know.
We had an action item, and it was short.
I know. Very different flavor.
Oh, I didn't ask. I didn't ask. As a matter of fact, I'm glad I didn't ask.